How many times do you click that button in a day? If you do it 120 times a day and you save a second, that's 2 minutes a day of time savings. Different time slots are worth different amounts. Say your time is worth $100 an hour. If you get 8 hours of savings, that's like someone just coming up to you and throwing $800 in your pocket. You stop following best practices because you don't have the time to follow the best practice, but then that gets you further into the quicksand of not having time. And that's the mindset shift of optimizing your team from transferring information fast to optimizing your team for retrieving fast.
Welcome to the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast, where we meet the world's top experts to explore the secrets of health, mindset, longevity, and so much more. Are you ready to take charge of your existence and biohack your life? This show is for you. Please keep in mind, we're not dispensing medical advice and are not responsible for any outcomes you may experience from implementing the tactics lying herein. Are you ready? Let's do this. Welcome back to the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. Okay, friends, I cannot wait for you to hear today's episode. I have recommended Nick's book, Come Up for Air, to so many people. And I talk about this in the show, but I didn't anticipate it having as big of an effect on me as it did. And that's because I was thinking it was more for, you know, large companies, people with lots of employees, but it was so applicable. It is changing the way I view my own personal job and business and everything that I do. If you are all about time efficiency and getting the maximum bang for your buck in all that you do in your pursuits of your life and your career, this is the book for you. This is the episode for you. I cannot wait to hear what you guys think. We talk about so many things like how to truly optimize your email. Are you overwhelmed with email? Can you not get through all the emails? Nick has a solution for that. Are you trying to find better ways to manage and organize and operate when it comes to accomplishing tasks? This is the show for you. What type of communication should you have within your company, within your work life? What is the power of no? And so much more. Nick has been there, he's done that, and now he's sharing his wisdom with so many people. I cannot thank him enough, and I can't wait to hear what you guys think. The show notes will have a full transcript as well as links to everything that we talked about. For that, just go to melanieavalon.com/comeupforair. There will be two episode giveaways for this episode. One will be in my Facebook group, IF Biohackers, Intermittent Fasting plus Real Foods plus Life. Comment something you learned or something that resonated with you on the pinned post to enter to win something that I love, and then check out my Friday announcement post on Instagram, and again, comment there to enter to win something that I love. If you're enjoying this show, the ultimate best way to support it is if you can take a moment and write a brief review in Apple Podcasts. It helps so much more than most people realize, so thank you so, so much in advance for that. Hi, friends. Did you know that one of our largest sources of toxic exposure each and every day is through our skincare and makeup? It is so frightening the effects these compounds can have on our health. So we put these products on to help us look better, and yet they actually can be aging us, contributing to health issues, fertility issues, thyroid issues, mood issues, and ready for something potentially even more shocking? A lot of these endocrine disruptors are actually obesogens, meaning they cause your body to gain weight and make it harder to lose weight. That's right, your skincare and makeup may be hindering your weight loss goals. Europe has banned thousands of these compounds, and the US has banned around a dozen. There's even a loophole from the 1960s that allows companies to put whatever they want in their products, and they don't even have to tell you. That's why I am overwhelmingly careful about the skincare and makeup that I use. But here's the thing, it can be hard to find skincare and makeup that is non-toxic and actually works. And then on top of that, that actually has all the products you need. I have found two companies, I am obsessed with their standards and use them every single day of my life and cannot recommend them enough. That's Counter, formerly known as Beauty Counter, and Crunchy. Both of these companies have incredible standards when it comes to what they put in their products. You can truly feel good about using them, and they actually work. For Counter products, go to melanieavalon.com/counter. And for Crunchy products, go to crunchy.com. That's crunchy.com/Melanie Avalon. New Crunchy customers can use the coupon code ADVOCATE10 to get 10% off. You'll also receive something special from me after your first order. I also highly recommend joining both of their loyalty programs. It's completely free to join, and with every purchase, you'll earn credit as well as other fun goodies. For all the latest updates, new products, specials, deals, and fun things for me, because yes, I love giving things away, get on my email list. That's at melanieavalon.com/cleanbeauty. You can also get text updates when you text skincare to 877-861-8318. That's skincare to 877-861-8318. So again, to shop with me and get a free gift from me after your first order, go to melanieavalon.com/counter and also crunchy.com/melanieavalon. And new customers use the coupon code ADVOCATE10 at Crunchy to get 10% off site-wide. And again, definitely join their free loyalty programs to earn credit on every order. Hey friends, exciting news. My Avalon X Spirulina is back in stock and now at a reduced price. Plus you get free shipping and my coupon code works on top of that sale price. Spirulina is honestly one of the most nutrient-dense things that you can put in your body in a whole foods, easy to eat form. It's a blue-green algae, which is a complete vegan protein packed with an incredible array of nutrients. We are talking 100% of your daily hard-to-get vitamin K, 625% of vitamin B12, over 1,000% of vitamin A, 86% of chromium, 27% of vitamin B2, plus so much more, including iron, GLA, the powerful antioxidant superoxide dismutase, and even glutathione. In fact, spirulina is so uniquely nutritious that it was actually studied by NASA to support the astronauts. I searched high and low to find the very best spirulina out there. Ours comes from a wonderful, sustainable, clean, environmentally friendly production facility in Hawaii. Not Thailand, Hawaii. And then on top of that, we did our own third-party testing for over 70 pesticides, heavy metals, toxins, all the things. This is the cleanest spirulina out there. And with spirulina, you can simplify your supplement routine and support your nutrition in one easy step. The tablets are super versatile. You can swallow them whole, blend them into smoothies, crush them up, or honestly, just eat them like I do. And again, we were out of stock, but now Avalon X Spirulina is finally back in stock at a reduced price, and my coupon code MelanieAvalon works on top of that too. Plus, you get free shipping. Just go to avalonx.us/spirulina and use the coupon code MelanieAvalon to get 10% off our new reduced price plus free shipping. That's avalonx.us/spirulina with the coupon code MelanieAvalon. All right, without further ado, please enjoy this wonderful conversation with my friend, Nick Sonnenberg. Hi, friends. Welcome back to the show. I am so incredibly excited about the conversation that I am about to have. I feel like it is a long time coming. I've so been looking forward to this. So the backstory on today's conversation, if friends have heard episode or the I feel like it's episodes because I talk about him so much. But if friends have heard the episode I did with my fabulous friend, John Levy, for his book, You're Invited, he is an incredible person and he has a tendency to introduce me to just the coolest people. And so it's been a long time now that he's been talking about this person, but for the longest time, he was saying, I had to meet this man, Nick Sonnenberg. So he connected me to Nick, and Nick had a book coming out called Come Up for Air, How Teams Can Leverage Systems and Tools to Stop Drowning in Work. And so what's interesting is I saw the book and the concept and the title. I mean, it looked amazing. I didn't know if it would be like, I didn't know if I personally would get a lot out of it since I don't have like a big, huge company situation. I'm just a little entrepreneur over here doing my thing.
Don't undersell yourself.
No, but for real. So I was like, we'll see. So I read the book. Okay, wow. So I learned so much in this book. I actually think this book is going to have a life-changing effect on me because it is changing how I am personally approaching my own business. And then appropriately enough, halfway through reading it, I actually did launch a company or started launching a company that will probably be a more traditional company. So that was really great because I was like, oh, I can start it off right from the beginning. And then on top of that, I have been recommending this book to so many people, especially you guys know I do my AvalonX supplements and I work with MD Logic. And some of you probably know Scott because I've done interviews with him. And I've been like, Scott, you have to read this book. You've got to start implementing this in your company. And so it was really just an amazing read. And then on top of that, even if you feel like it won't apply to you, like I felt like in the beginning, I learned so much about efficiency and productivity, which are things I love. I learned about dealing with email, meetings, just so many incredible things. So I have so many questions. And Nick, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you very much for having me and for those kind remarks. It really means a lot.
Also, apologies because I screwed up our meeting link in the beginning. So we wasted some time, which was embarrassing because this is the man who's all about systems and efficiency. So my bad.
It's all right. I was clearing out my inbox while I was waiting.
Oh, perfect. Okay. I feel better. Thank you. So to start things off, oh, and by the way, because I have your book in my hand right now, just to give an endorsement. So the cover has an endorsement from Tony Robbins, quote, Nick has cracked the code on operational efficiency. I mean, that's saying a lot. So on that note, you talk about this in the book, but can you tell listeners a little bit about your personal story? You are with the company Leverage now, but what led you to, I mean, everything, because you talk about your schooling life and your life with stocks and being an entrepreneur and all the stuff. So what led you to what you're doing today? Why did you write this book?
Well, I wrote the book because I want to help people, and I firsthand know what it's like to drown in work. And I feel like we, after a lot of tinkering, I feel like Leverage, my company, is basically like a think tank where we really tinker with all the new ways of working, all the new systems. We really stress test, not like, you know, this is how you click a button to create a task, but like, how can we think about this outside the box and define best practices and really focus on not just how to use it, but when to use them and what scenarios should you use these tools? I saw that it made such a big impact to our company and to our clients that we do the training and consulting of all these different systems and processes. And I wrote a book because ultimately I want to make as big of an impact as possible. And I want to, you know, time is our most valuable asset. And if I could help gift back to the world millions of hours of wasted time that was just going to be completely inefficient and not things that give people joy or, you know, tap into their superpower, I thought that that would be a pretty cool impact to make. And my background, I actually started off as a trader on Wall Street. I was a high frequency trader, in case if you've ever heard of that, but basically, I'm a mathematician, and I would build algorithms and code computers to trade stocks at microsecond speeds. So we're talking literally microseconds, nanoseconds. Knew nothing about the companies. It was all purely based off of math, trying to capture fractions of a penny of theoretical price discrepancies, and would just trade billions and billions of dollars. And I did that for about 8 years. It really taught me how to appreciate time in a completely different dimension. Because like in that space, literally a microsecond can mean millions. And it really teaches you how to deconstruct a process, how to celebrate small wins, and just trains you how to think in a unique way. By the time I was 30, I did pretty well. I had some money in the bank, didn't have, you know, a family or kids. And I had an idea for a startup, and I decided it was a good time to take the leap and give it a go at the startup world. I was always passionate about productivity, saving time, my whole life, really. And so I had an idea for a scheduling app called Calvin and did that for about a year. And during that year, one day I was having dinner with one of my best friends who was also in the productivity space. It coincidentally happened that night we were having dinner, a company called Zirtual, which was the biggest virtual assistant company, announced bankruptcy. And we were really familiar with the freelancer marketplace space and the virtual assistant space. And so we were talking during dinner, and at the end of it, we had an idea for a new type of freelancer marketplace. And I said, like, why don't I build the back end in a day? You get 5 clients and we launch on day 2 as like a fun side project. We weren't really thinking much about it. And we did it. And about a month later, speaking of Tony Robbins, we're at a conference where he's the day 2 speaker and we were the day 3 speaker. And we're talking about kind of what we're thinking about and talking about new ways of work. And this is back in 2015. So like things like Slack and Trello and Zapier and a lot of the tools that still many companies aren't using most. And if you are, you're probably not using them to their highest and best use. But back then they were kind of just like a foreign language. So we kind of introduced these things at the conference and got like 90% of people to raise their hand and sign up as clients. Fast forward a year, we're doing 7 figures in revenue and have 150 people on the team, and we didn't raise any money. Now, that all sounds impressive, but under the hood, we were a complete mess. We scaled prematurely. People were really impressed with kind of, you know, the 7 figures and 150 people, but we got too far ahead of our skis. We didn't have that operational efficiency foundation. And for example, our org chart was just 2 people. I was the head of non-people, so I was doing all the behind the scenes stuff, and my partner was the head of people. So, you know, literally only clients and team members only knew him. I was doing all the behind the scenes stuff. And then one day we're having coffee, year 2, and he taps me on the shoulder and he tells me he's leaving. Not in 2 weeks or 2 days. He's like literally leaving in 2 minutes. And I go white and I'm thinking to myself, like, holy crap, we're going to go bankrupt. Because on top of kind of missing this foundation, like we were also losing a lot of money. We were like $750,000 in debt. And the P&L that year was like minus $450,000. So we were growing fast, but we weren't making money. And so he leaves, and immediately in a three-month period, we lose 40% of clients and revenue. And I'm cashing out my 401k. My dad's taking a second mortgage on the house to help us make payroll. Bank accounts are getting frozen. I mean, it was, to say I was drowning in work would be an understatement. And I had to make a choice. Do I just bankrupt the company that most people advised, or do I stick it out, not screw our clients out of the credits that we owed them, but also I did see a path to turning things around. I could see where we were tripping up. Communication was all over the place. We were wasting so much time on communication. It wasn't easy in 1 or 2 clicks to just answer basic questions like, who's working on what? What's the status of this project? So I knew I needed to be able to do that. And then lastly, like where we documented our knowledge, we were pretty good about that already. Had we not have been, we probably would have gone bankrupt. But I knew that, you know, we needed to be able to retrieve any piece of information in the companies, you know, very fast. So I started kind of focusing on those 3 key areas, and very quickly things started turning around. And word got out about kind of how we were operating, and just through referral, people started introducing me to companies to consult them on internal efficiency. So that's how I met Tony, and I worked with poop spray companies like Poopery and cryptocurrencies and financial advisors. And what I found was all the stuff that was turning leverage around was really impactful for, you know, the number one coach in the world or a poop spray company or a financial advisor. So it didn't matter your team size or industry. Everyone needed to communicate with, you know, team members and clients. Everyone needed to manage tasks and projects. You know, that's what I call their plan. And everyone had resources. They had intellectual property. And so that was kind of the genesis of this framework called CPR, Communicate, Plan, and Resource. And I just saw this big opportunity to pivot leverage to help businesses in CPR. And so I kind of like organically, over time, we just shifted into bringing that into leverage. And now that being the core of what we do, which is operational efficiency, training and consulting for teams and companies. And what we found is on average, we're able to almost immediately save every single person in a company a full business day a week. in often cases, we're able to see, you know, 20, 40% productivity gain per person in a company. And, you know, if you think about what your payroll, if you're, you know, an entrepreneur or a business owner, you know, say your payroll's even $1 million a year, you know, 20 to 40%, like that's 200 to 400K of value creation, just cleaning up some dumb stuff that's really quick to clean up. You know, and then obviously if it's a $10 million a year company, you're talking $2 to $4 million a year. So it was massive bottom line impact in this kind of niche consulting world. And yeah, we just kind of put a stake in the ground. We're like, we're going to be best in the world at this. And that's kind of what led me to writing this book. We just saw, at this point, we've worked with thousands and thousands of teams. And we've just, at this point, realized that this CPR framework is kind of this, you know, indisputable, call it law for lack of a better word, that every business needs to be thinking about. And it's worked with every single team that we've ever worked with. And, you know, we wanted to write a book to get the knowledge and the message out.
That's a very epic story. And it sounds very stressful. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I mean, everything that I develop is, it's never like do as I say, not as I do. It's because we've experienced the pain of not having something work. And then, you know, the engineer in me will say, okay, well, we have to come up with a solution and figure out some intellectual property, content, best practice that then we package and deliver to our clients. So everything that we develop is something that we've stress tested internally first, and it's always come from pain. I mean, I literally couldn't have been more drowning in work during that situation. But the silver lining is at the end of the pain comes a new best practice that not only helps us, but helps a lot of other teams.
Yeah, that was something I was really impressed with when you were telling the story in the book, and you mentioned it just now, but that decision not to, you know, file bankruptcy and basically just leave all those people in the dark. So how would you know when to leave something? So for example, like the Calvin app, you didn't continue with, but this you did, you know, address and fix. Like, how do you know when you're drowning if maybe you should just let that thing drown?
I think that you need to see a light at the end of the tunnel. And if you don't have a vision with a clear path to achieving it that can sustain your current pain, then you should get out.
Okay. I have a very nuanced question about time, and I hope I can properly articulate it. But you're speaking about this idea of, you know, basically giving people however many extra days back of work in time. And throughout the book, there are all of these examples and processes and ways to save time and be more efficient. So what happens when the time requires it being cumulative? And what I mean by that is, so say, because I think you talk in the email section, you talk about how like even keyboard shortcuts, for example, can save you a few seconds. And so if you add up all those seconds over a year, it's X amount of time you got back. But if you're getting time back in minute little packages where it's like a second, does it not require time to be linear in a row for it to actually have value? Like, does the clock reset every night? Like, do you get to bank up that time? That is the question, and get productivity from it.
Think about it in cumulative, right? So like or think about it. There's a lot of parallels to money. You can invest money, you can spend money, you can waste money. It's the same thing with time. You can spend your time, waste your time. Like, you could paint a wall and stare at the wall and watch paint dry. And literally, it'd be the equivalent of burning dollars, right? You're just burning time. You can invest money. Like, you could go and put $100 in the stock market and hope that in a year from now, maybe it's worth, maybe you've got $110 and you got a 10% return. You can invest your time. Like, you can learn how to use email properly, which is probably our number one training program. Let's say it takes you 5 hours to really become a ninja in email, right? But on average, we're seeing that you can save, depending on volume, 3 to 5 hours a week. I mean, basically, after your first 1 or 2 weeks, you've broken even on that investment because what you've invested in terms of time, like forget about the money aspect, which is negligible, like just the time commitment. After 2 weeks, you've now recovered all the time you've put in. And now for the rest of your life, every week you've just gotten a gift of 3 to 5 hours that you could do whatever you want with. You could do more work. You could do more projects. You could go and read more books. I'm not trying to tell anyone what to do with their freed up time, right? So, you know, try to think about it in perpetuity. You know, I invest this much to learn something. How much time savings is it going to yield for me in perpetuity? Or if you want to put, you know, do a 10-year calculation, you know, over the next 10 years, if I do this, I'm going to save this much time and it's going to take me these many hours to set it up. You know, is it worth it? And things like a keyboard shortcut are just so easy to do that, you know, at scale, one click of a button that you save a second isn't going to change your life. But think of things at scale. Like how many times do you click that button in a day? If you do it 120 times a day and you save a second, that's 2 minutes a day of time savings. Okay, maybe that's not going to be the end all be all, but maybe at the end of the week, that's 10 minutes. And maybe at the end of the month, that's 40 minutes, right? And then maybe at the end of the year, that's like 8 hours. And again, like maybe that 8 hours isn't going to be the difference between you being broke and a billionaire. But I don't know about you, but you know, if you wanted to give me say your time is worth $100 an hour, if you get 8 hours of savings, that's like someone just coming up to you and throwing $800 in your pocket. Like I'd take it. And also when you start celebrating small wins, which is one of the lessons I got from high frequency trading, you start noticing other things. Like when you start training your eyes to celebrate these small wins and look at these things, you might start finding hundreds of these small wins. So like imagine at the end of the year, someone doesn't just throw one $800 check in your pocket, but they throw 100 of them in your pocket. So, you know, think about it from that lens. I think a lot of people are just looking for like immediate signals or immediate points of gratification, which is hard to usually find. But when you start looking at things and looking at things from that lens, I like to look at everything from the lens of how does this affect an entire organization? So, you know, what we just talked about was one person, but if you have a team of 10, you know, that's like an $8,000 check at the end of the year for the business, right? And so it starts becoming even more so important from the lens of a business owner or an entrepreneur when you start, you know, multiplying these benefits by the number of people on your team.
Hey friends, I am about to tell you how to get 10% off the ideal coffee when it comes to supporting your health. So if you guys know me, you know I am obsessed with optimizing basically everything I consume, and that especially relates to coffee. Did you know that coffee is one of the most powerful sources of antioxidants in the modern diet? And yet, not all coffee is created equal. Between sourcing, farming practices, roasting, and contaminants, there can be a huge difference in the health impact of the coffee that you drink. That is exactly why I created Glow Coffee. Glow Coffee is a premium, specialty-grade Arabica coffee sourced from sustainable women-led farms in Colombia. It's organically grown, and we third-party test it meticulously, like every single lot, for purity. And what makes Glow especially exciting from a biohacking perspective is that we specifically made it to be rich in chlorogenic acid, or CGA. That's one of coffee's primary, most potent antioxidant compounds that has been studied for its role in metabolic health, inflammation, oxidative stress, and so much more. The elevation levels of the beans, how they're grown, and how they're roasted all affect CGA levels. So we searched high and low to find the perfect beans naturally high in CGA and tested them to confirm that, and then we roast those beans to preserve the CGA content. And then test after that as well. Coffee is already one of the potentially biggest contributors of antioxidants in the human diet, so I designed Glow Coffee to maximize those benefits while keeping it incredibly clean and high quality. And this coffee is so clean. It's grown organically, of course, but then we go even farther than that. We third-party test the beans for almost 100 toxic compounds, including pesticides, heavy metals, and mold. Oh, and perhaps the best part is it is absolutely delicious. We're talking smooth, low bitterness, It's honestly the exact coffee I personally want to drink every single day of my life. It's so bright, smooth, and delicious that it's also perfect black for fasting. No added sweeteners or cream needed. You can also splash it on your face for an antioxidant-rich toner. I do that every single day. After the sauna, after the shower, all the things. I created Glow Coffee because it's really about upgrading one of our most common daily habits into something that truly supports your health and performance. You can get 10% off with the coupon code MelanieAvalon at glowcoffeeco.com. That's 10% off Glow Coffee with the coupon code MelanieAvalon at glowcoffeeco.com. Are you ready to glow inside and out? Fuel your day, illuminate your way. That's glowcoffeeco.com.
Gotcha. I like the small wins thing. It's kind of funny how much I've been thinking about the keyboard shortcut thing and trying to figure out if the time, if you get to like get benefit from that time. I know I'm going down a complete rabbit hole. Say you do the keyboard shortcut and it gives you back 2 seconds doing that email right then. You can't do anything in that extra 2 seconds probably before your next commitment. So did you actually get that time? I get the small win aspect and you feel better because you get it done quicker. But can you actually do anything?
Every second matters. You know, like, I mean, think about it the extreme opposite. Like, say you don't care about any seconds, you know, that, you know, and think about what your life and productivity would be like if you always just with everything thought, oh, well, what's a second? Well, I always like to think in extreme cases as like a step in my process for developing kind of IP and content. So imagine the opposite. You know, if the opposite's happening, you get nothing done in a day. Every second matters, especially in this day and age, because like, okay, yeah, that 1 second, maybe you're not going to feel it. But again, like if that 1 second happens 120 times a day, and then you've got 100 other tricks that are saving you a second, it definitely does add up. You know, in 1 second, I can click to another tab. Okay. I mean, we're starting to get kind of really granular. So I hope that the listeners aren't thinking that it's like, just like, oh, he's teaching me how to save a second. It's more of a mindset, you know, like this is more of a mindset. It's like seconds at scale. Every second matters. And if you can save a second, but like hundreds a day across your team, it starts adding up to meaningful amounts of money at the end of the day. And money aside, productivity aside, people want to have like a better work environment where it's not as stressful, where they're not getting distracted every second, where it's not like a scavenger hunt to find things. So it also makes work just more enjoyable, the closer it is to being a well-oiled machine.
To give listeners a broader picture, this was me going super granular on just one tiny little thing, but the entirety of the book is much more, like Nick said, well, bigger processes and implementations and more about a mindset and a complete shift in everything. While we're on the email topic, because that's something that pretty much most people are dealing with. And so you have something a very cool system called Inbox Zero, which I haven't done it yet.
Got to get on it.
I do my unread system. I do the unread system.
Yeah, that's a popular system too. But I'm telling you, like the Inbox Zero system, it literally can save on average, because we survey people that go through our programs and we work with. We'll do a survey kind of pre and post, where it's like, how many emails did you have at the beginning? How many you have at the end? How many hours a week did you spend an email before? How many are you spending now? It literally can give you almost immediately 3 to 5 hours a week. It's like the number one thing. Like, and it doesn't matter if you're an employee, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're a team of one, if you're a team of 100. That's the quickest path to just getting back a quick 10%.
So, and I don't want to give away all the secrets, but long story short, what is Inbox Zero?
Inbox Zero, basically, let's start with what is email. Email is just an external to-do list that other people can add to.
Which I love that. Sorry, I don't like interrupting, but when I read that, I was like, oh, that's powerful.
Right. And so like, what do you like to do with to-do lists? You like to check off that you've done things, right? It's the Zeigarnik effect, who's like a psychologist back in like the 1930s. You like to check things off. Like as humans, it's just a part of our nature. And email is the same thing. You don't want to be looking at the same stuff over and over, read or unread. You want to treat it like a to-do list and clear it out. So when you're opening it, like right now, and I'm not saying this to brag, inbox zero does not literally mean you have zero things in your email. It just means, say, you have less than 20, 30. It means that you have a system where you're not wasting time relooking at things, where you have a system where you're not wasting time going on a scavenger hunt, where you're not wasting time organizing things into a complex foldering structure instead of searching, where you could snooze emails and things magically pop up when you want them to pop up. A world where you're not missing. I can't tell you enough how many people that go through these programs and we ask them kind of like, what were some of the big takeaways? A lot of it's not even the time savings. It's that they would have missed an email that could have been worth tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars to them that would have slipped through the cracks because they just didn't have a good grip on their email. And so you have way less missed opportunities. So inbox zero is basically you have less than 20 or 30 emails in your inbox, and we teach you a very structured framework of how to deal with every email that comes in. So you're never going to miss a single one. You're never going to miss an opportunity. And you're never going to waste time and, you know, have email control you. It's a way to empower you to take control back over it.
So I encourage listeners, if they want to learn this magical system, to get the book. And then actually, you did just mention something, though, the boomerang effect of emails. And that's something that really stuck with me, because you talk about in the book about how one of the ways, you know, just in general with email to help reduce emails is the less you send out, like basically every time you answer an email, you're inviting a reply back. By sending out less, you get back less. And that's something I've really struggled with, because I personally feel the need to answer every single email, even if it might not need to be answered. I've cognitively tried to, you know, not do that going forward. So that's been really, really helpful.
Well, the best way to get to inbox zero is email zero. So a big emphasis on a lot of the stuff that, you know, we do research on and we train and consult on is, when should you use these tools? It all starts with the when, not the how. Like, when should you use email versus Slack versus text versus, you know, Asana or whatever it is? Because if you don't align with your team on when to use these tools, even if you know how to click certain buttons and where things, you know, how to do some of those things, the biggest waste of time in companies is what I call the scavenger hunt, which is where you have to go and look in a million different places to find what you're looking for. And so most of the things happening in email actually should be either in a tool like Slack or Microsoft Teams, if it's internal communication, and there's specific functionality that those tools have, which makes it optimal for internal communication. Or it should be in a work management tool like Asana or Monday or one of those tools, if it's actionable and you want to hold someone accountable and you want to be able to click a button and know, you know, that Melanie this week is working on this, and this, or, you know, the status of this project, you want to be able to click a button and answer that. So different tools are built for different purpose. And one of the biggest issues I see today inside of companies is that there's a misalignment of the purpose of all these tools, and it's just kind of fallen into this mindset where everyone can just do whatever they want. You know, it's like largely a personal preference thing, and that just doesn't work. Like, if you're running a team or a company and everyone's just kind of putting stuff wherever they feel like it, you know, it just becomes a cluster. And by investing the time and aligning your team on the purpose of each of these tools and in what situation should you put something in, you know, the first drawer, you know, the email drawer versus the Slack drawer versus the Asana drawer, the way to get exponential productivity inside of teams is you align your team on the purpose of each of these drawers, and people start taking the time to take a step back, and even if it takes an extra click or two, put it in the right drawer. And that's the mindset shift of optimizing your team from transferring information fast to optimizing your team for retrieving fast. It's the equivalent of like how we already do our laundry. When you do your laundry, you don't just take stuff out of the dryer and throw it into one drawer, even though that would be the fastest way to be done with your laundry. What you do is you take pause and you put things in the right drawer. You put your underwear in your underwear drawer, your socks in your sock drawer. That takes an extra few seconds each, you know, for each piece of your laundry, but you do that because tomorrow when you need to put an outfit together, it's much faster to retrieve your outfit. And so it's the same thing in business. You've got all these different drawers. People need to understand, most importantly, when to not use a tool. And then they also have to understand when to use a tool. And then the third most important is, you know, the how-to and the best practices.
That was definitely a major paradigm shift that I think a lot of people can have. And it's something that I intuitively, I think, in life was catching on to and knew I should be doing, but hadn't really concentrated on implementing. And now, ever since reading your book, I've become super aware of it, especially like in today's modern age where we can communicate so many different ways and things will sort of like sync up. So there's, you know, your text and then you have iMessage on your computer and then you have email and then, well, you know, these internal communication systems. So basically this idea that the communication needs to be in a certain place, a large portion of what you say is, this might be a little bit of a shock to people, but that email should just be for external communication. So from your company out to like clients and such, not internal. I think that's going to scare people. Like, so maybe that concept of not using it for internal communication. Do you get a lot of friction from people with that?
Especially email. It's been around for decades and not every team or company has heard of some of these other tools or use them. Every single person uses either Gmail or Outlook and they've developed bad habits over the years. Most people, basically everyone, I'm sure you listening right now, think to yourself, I've got a good system. Like I've been doing it this way for years and it seems to be working. And so that's always a challenge when you develop, you know, it's like telling someone that they need to brush their teeth with their other hand. It's uncomfortable. Behavior change is hard. I think the most important thing though is people have a student mindset and you're always thinking and open-minded to a better way. If you have that mindset, you can go really far.
I wrote down one of your quotes. You said that you used to think a business could only grow as fast as knowledge transfers, but really it can only grow as fast as it's retrieved, which I think is, yeah, a good foundation. This is actually sort of similar and related, but it's something that I read about in your book, and then I realized it's something I've been doing in my own life as well. I just hadn't really put a label to it. This idea, especially in today's society with all of our overwhelming slew of notifications, but this push-pull system. And I realized I've been doing this. So I have all notifications turned off to the greatest extent possible that I can. I turn them off because I don't want everybody to be able to just attack me with information all the time. So then I have to go in. So like I'm slightly different, you know, I'm like a social media influencer and biohacker and podcaster, but I have to like go into Facebook and engage, or I have to go into Instagram and engage. It can't just come to me, like insert itself in my life. So I really liked that concept of the push-pull system. How does that manifest in a company mindset?
I mean, push-pull is just like another way of saying kind of optimize for retrieve. You know, you want to, Cal Newport wrote a book called Deep Work. My friend Nir Eyal wrote a book called Indistractable. You know, and when you have a push system and you're just getting constant notifications, you kind of lose control. And when you're in a flow state and you're taken out of a flow state, it could take, you know, like 15 minutes to get back into it. You know, Stephen Kotler is a friend of mine. He's like the world expert in flow when we're behind the scenes talking about putting together some content about the intersection of flow and operational efficiency. But, you know, when you're in a push state, you cannot be in a flow state. And you want your team, you want yourself to be in a flow state to produce, you know, the highest quality work possible. And also, I just want to emphasize, we've been talking a lot on this call about saving time, but it's also about optimizing time. Not all time is worth the same. So, of course, you want to save as much time as possible, but you also want to optimize your time. So we used the example earlier, like say your time is worth $100 an hour. That's just a blanket statement. It is not the case where if you look at every time slot on your calendar, it's not that every time slot is a $100 an hour time slot. Like, for example, you know, and a lot of your listeners are biohackers. So let's just say, you know, you wake up in the morning and you go to the gym, you take your supplements, your, you know, pre-workout smoothie or drink, you meditate, you do breath work, you journal, you do whatever you do in your mornings, like whatever sets you up for the day, right? And you do that, say, every day, but like say it's Monday right now and you've just also had a relaxing weekend, right? And you finish all that and you maybe you do, you know, a bulletproof coffee or a coffee or whatever, you know, all of that's done, you shower, now it's 9 o'clock. At that point, your brain is probably firing, assuming you have a good quality sleep, your brain's functioning at full horsepower. So what you can achieve, you know, at that time slot could be exponentially more than fast forward to Friday at 7 o'clock. You've had 100 Zoom calls for the week. You're tired. You're in the back of an Uber. You don't have your laptop with you. What you can do at that point, just based off of your brain's horsepower and not having your laptop, is not going to be worth the same. So different time slots based off of where your brain's horsepower is and what you have access to are worth different amounts. It's not just about saving time, it's about optimizing your time. So I always encourage people, you know, you could do things also, some quick wins are analyze the meetings that you're having and anything that could be done asynchronously, meaning you have someone kind of pre-record a video that you could watch on your own time when you're in the back of that Uber and, you know, you've got kind of nothing better to do. You know, imagine if you could cut your hour-long 9 to 10 a.m. call. What if you could cut that to 30 minutes or 45 minutes? And now you've got an extra 15 minutes when your brain's at that high horsepower. You know, if your brain, if that time slot to you is worth $1,000 an hour for that time slot, 15 minutes is worth $250, right? And if you could just do a time shift and now that 15 minutes, you could do high level work. And now instead of just looking out the window doing nothing in that Uber, you can watch the recording at 1.5-2x speed. That's a massive win.
Hey friends. Did you know there is an ancient botanical that modern research shows performs on a level comparable to metformin when it comes to supporting healthy blood sugar levels? And not only that, this compound also supports the gut microbiome, healthy cholesterol levels, and even stimulates the AMPK pathway in the body to support cellular cleanup and longevity. You might have heard about AMPK. We talk about it a lot in the context of fasting, which also stimulates it. I am talking about berberine. I take berberine every single day of my life, and I see massive differences on my CGM, my continuous glucose monitor, when I use it. I take it to support my fast and before meals to reduce blood sugar levels. It is a powerhouse of a compound. And like I said, people are prescribed the pharmaceutical metformin to control their blood sugar levels when they could be taking this completely natural compound that has been used for thousands of years in both ancient traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine. I wanted to make the best berberine on the market, so that's why I created Avalon X Berberine 500. We did so much testing to find the most potent, pure, and clean form available. There's no problematic fillers, no common allergens, just pure, vegan, lab-tested berberine extracted from traditional sources. Friends, I am not kidding the difference I see on my blood sugar levels with this berberine. We're talking no post-meal spikes when I eat all that fruit and lower fasting blood sugar levels. It also reduced my HbA1c and my cholesterol levels. You can get it at avalonx.us. And the coupon code IFPODCAST will get you 10% off. You can also get a one-time 20% off coupon code when you text AvalonX to 877-861-8318. That's AvalonX to 877-861-8318. And you can get a 15% off coupon code by signing up for email updates. For that, just go to avalonx.us/email list. Again, friends, this is one of the most powerful compounds you can add into your health and wellness routine. Healthy blood sugar control, even if you're not pre-diabetic or diabetic, is so important, and berberine helps support that. It is the ultimate compound for blood sugar control, cholesterol, your gut microbiome, and longevity. Get it at avalonx.us with the coupon code IFPODCAST.
I love that. And it's sort of similar as well to a concept you talk about, which is doing things that can only be done at certain places, doing those things there. And that was very vague. So let me elaborate. Basically, and this is something that I try to do as well, and I've tried to do even more since reading your book, but if you're at your desk, that is when you are going to do the work that can only be done at your desk, rather than something that could be done, like you just said, like in an Uber on your phone. Or for example, I do a sauna session every night, and it's this unit where my head is the sunlight and solo unit. So my head is out of it, so I can like do work on my phone. So I only do things then every night that can only really be done then. So yeah, I don't know if that makes sense to people. So basically, if you're at your desk, don't be doing stuff on your phone that you could do later. Well, while we're talking about meetings, I love your section on agendas. So there's a very helpful section on how to have meeting agendas. And you even go so far as to say, no agenda, no meeting. That's a heavy hitter. I feel like that's something I need to start implementing in general. Do you find that really helpful for people? Or is that hard for people to implement?
Yeah, look, when you're drowning in work where everyone is, which is why I called the book Come Up for Air, you're kind of just in survival mode. When you're in survival mode, you're not making the best decisions. You're just trying to survive. So when you're in survival mode, you don't have very much extra time. And so you've kind of fallen to this trap where, you know, you stop following best practices because you don't have the time to follow the best practice. But then that gets you further into the quicksand of not having time, right? So, you know, it does take time to prepare for a meeting. It does take time to think through what's the agenda and pre-work and all that stuff. But that investment, because it's not a spend, that's an investment, should generate a positive return, because by doing that upfront heavy lifting, you should net overall, you know, maybe instead of not coming to a decision on the first call and needing to book a second call, because of the pre-work, you've been able to achieve everything you need to on that one call, you know? But because we're busy, we just show up not really well prepared. We don't get to a final decision. And then what do we do? We got to throw another meeting on the calendar. So you got to kind of figure out a way to kind of gain a little bit of breathing room so that you can slowly start to execute on these best practices and kind of reinvest the time savings that you're doing. It's also, you know, just go back to that parallel of money. When you're in credit card debt and you're paying 20% interest on a credit card, it's really hard to get out of it because you're just in this quicksand. And the moment you got freed up money, like, you're just paying the interest basically.
And for listeners, if you get the book, the section on meetings is very helpful. So it has a list of questions to ask to figure out if you actually need the meeting. And then if you do need the meeting, well, first of all, it talks about how to reduce meeting time in general. And then, do you actually need meetings? And then if you have meetings, how to go about them. Very, very helpful. Something else I love, and these are just like random different things, but you talk in the book about tasks and projects and portfolios. So for listeners, you have to get the book to read all about this. But something that really stuck with me, and I don't know why I laughed, but I thought this was really funny. You talk about this idea of assigning tasks and diffusion of responsibility, and basically that tasks within the company need to be assigned to just one person. Because apparently if you assign it to more than one person, people just assume other people are going to do it. I don't know why I think that's so funny, but that stuck with me. So now I've like kept that going forward. And I realized I didn't really ask a question there. Do you have thoughts on diffusion of responsibility and assigning tasks?
Yeah. I mean, if more than one person owns something, no one owns it. And my friend Lee Brower says, I don't know where he got it from, but, you know, one noose, one neck. It just needs to be crystal clear. And that's the purpose of tools like Asana or others is, you know, if you want to have transparency and accountability, you should be delegating in the proper tool. And you know, you shouldn't be delegating work inside of a communications tool, because it's not communications, it's work management. If I want to know like what's everything that I asked Melanie to do that's past due, you can't go into a communications tool and answer that. So different tools are built for different purposes. And, you know, you want to have a team that's highly aligned, who's very clear on what they need to do, what success looks like. And then you need to remove all the friction and barriers to let them do their job, right? So a lot of this operational efficiency stuff is removing the barriers to allow them to be able to execute on what their job is, but they have to be really clear on what their job is.
Speaking to that agency that you're giving to people, I'm just curious, because you talk about with meetings that leverage you let people leave the meeting if they feel they don't actually need to be there. How often does that happen that people leave?
Not as often, because like we're also like very conscious of the cost associated with a meeting. Meetings are one of the most expensive things in businesses. Last year, I read a stat that there was over $30 billion of productivity waste in meetings in the US. The funny thing is, a lot of those meetings were about how to be more productive. But that's another conversation. But when you start thinking about the cost of a meeting, if you got, you know, three people on a call for an hour and their hourly rate is $100 an hour, it's a $300 call. So when you start like kind of looking at it from that lens, it doesn't matter if they're a salaried person or not, like they don't have infinite time. Like all of these people have some implied hourly rate, whether you're paying them hourly or not, it doesn't matter. And so when you start really starting to think about the cost of certain meetings and putting dollar values on it, you really start, you know, questioning yourself, like, do I really need Nick on that call? You know, his time is worth X. And when you start really, you know, looking at things from a dollar perspective, you start really only making sure that you got the right people on the calls.
So deciding what actually needs to be done, you talk about this idea of the power of no, which I love. So how can people know what they should say yes to and what they shouldn't? So what they should actually be doing?
This is the difference between efficiency and effectiveness. Efficiency is doing things right, which is what we've been talking about. That's what my book is about. Effectiveness is doing the right things. So I really try to stay in my lane and stick to the efficiency part. My role, you know, with my with what we do at Leverage, my company, and you know, the impact I want to make to the world is I want to just make sure people are doing things right and reducing all the friction and wasted time and optimize and free up as much time as possible. What they then go and do with that time, that's on the effectiveness side. And that's kind of on you. Like, you know, for me, I, you know, want to refocus kind of all of this kind of new gifted time. I want to do it on things that are, you know, going to make the biggest impact that I'm relatively best at doing.
So keeping it more specific within your framework, which actually works well because it ties into my second question, you talk about how basically if you're doing something multiple times, like within the work system, then it should be like delegated or automated or deferred. When I read that, I was like, whoa, because I was realizing all the things I do multiple times that I guess could be delegated or deferred or automated. But I think it's really scary for a lot of people to do that. Yeah. So what are your thoughts on that concept?
Yeah, I think anything that doesn't tap into your unique ability or give you joy should be triggers for how do I get this off my plate? And, you know, the best way to stop to get something off your plate is like, you know, a lot of things that are happening in business right now that you're doing. When I ask people why are they doing it, the number one response is, well, it's because we've always done it. And when you actually like start challenging the status quo and really digging in, there's a lot of things that are happening that probably you could just completely scrap altogether, and you don't need to delegate or automate or, you know, do later or anything. Like a lot of things, like just, you could probably just stop doing. Joe Polish, who's a friend and a small business partner, you know, often talks about how your not to-do list is more important than your to-do list. So really being clear on like what actually needs to get done. And then, you know, when you kind of start looking at things through the filter, like, does this give me joy or tap into my unique ability? You know, you'll notice that probably unfortunately, a significant amount of what you do day to day doesn't fall into that.
Yeah. One of my other favorite quotes from the book, it might've been a quote of a quote. You were talking about what is the least productive thing. And somebody said, it might've been you, or you might've been quoting somebody, but it was nothing is less productive than to make more efficient what shouldn't be done at all. That was another moment where I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah. You can polish a turd, but who said that? I think it was it Drucker?
I'd have to look. I didn't pull the name with it. I'm going to put it in a story post after this, so I'll find out. Super random question that I don't think you talked about in the book. How do you feel about how AI is going to affect all of this? or continue to affect it.
I think that AI is definitely going to, there's going to be use cases where you're going to be able to save time using it. So I don't know. I'm interested to see how can we incorporate AI into collaboration and workflows. I think that right now, you know, where things are at with ChatGPT, I think that you can save time getting some rough drafts of, you know, content and, you know, blogs. I think it can help you save some time there. I don't think that it's as impactful in other aspects of business yet, but I think, you know, it doesn't take too much imagination to kind of forecast that it's going to, you know, improve our efficiency and productivity. But the beauty of it is I still think that it doesn't mean that you don't need to be following that CPR framework or getting to inbox zero or any of these things. Like, I think that just puts, you know, sprinkles on the cake or some gasoline on the fire, but you still need to be, you know, putting things in the right drawer and knowing when and how to use all these tools and using AI as a tool and not really expecting it to be the panacea that's going to solve all of your problems.
Do you use ChatGPT just in general?
Yeah, we're playing around with it. It's impressive. There's a lot of really interesting use cases for it, you know, but it's only as smart as what you put into it. So you have to, you know, you have to be, so to speak, a prompt engineer and be creative on, I mean, that's going to be a role in itself in the future, like prompt engineering, knowing kind of being creative and knowing kind of how to get the most value out of that tool. Just like what we're talking about here, which is kind of what we do at Leverage and what I do, which is, you know, how do you get the most out of these other tools? You know, so it's just another tool, just like Slack or Asana. And it's important that you know how to use it, because if you don't use it properly, it's not going to be that valuable to you.
Hi, friends. Guess what? Have you ever wanted a dating app that takes into account your dietary preferences? Things like fasting, whether or not you're paleo, keto, vegan, omnivore, junk food lover, whatever it may be. Or maybe it's important to you that you date a fellow wine drinker or a coffee lover, or you're sober curious and don't want drinks to be the first date. Speaking of first dates, did you know that the top 4 first dates all involve food or drink? That's right. Food and drink are super important for compatibility. That's why I'm making a dating app to address this. It's basically like any other mainstream dating app, except you can filter by dietary preference. For all of the launch information, including how to get it and launch specials, get on the email list. For that, go to cravingdating.com. Again, that's cravingdating.com. Through that list, we'll be sending updates, information about the launch, and even let you guys weigh in on the development. So again, go now to cravingdating.com.
Feels like I was like dating somebody like ChatGPT and I was like, oh, he's impressive. He's alluring. I like him. And then I was like, oh, he lies. I got to start fact checking everything. So I'm a little bit disillusioned. I got to wait for the future versions. And what about, you make a big statement in that pretty much everything throughout history has been projects and has been accomplished through this idea of like sprint planning. Listeners can get the books to get the full picture, but just briefly, what is this concept of sprint planning?
I mean, it's basically just aligning with what matters most and what being realistic and having a framework to reasonably guess what can get done in a week and having that visibility both for yourself, but also of your team so that, you know, everyone's kind of on the same page. That's what I'm calling sprint planning. And then we kind of go much deeper in the book on that one.
Yeah. So definitely get the book for that. Is there anything you're working on? Because you mentioned at the beginning when you have, you know, something you're trying to fix, what are you most trying to figure out right now?
Well, a big thing right now is being clever and creative with, you know, all of these new OpenAI, ChatGPT, and so on and so forth, you know, using them in combination with everything in the CPR framework and kind of enhancing efficiency and collaboration and being clever with, you know, using those tools to collaborate better. That's a key area of focus right now, that of content and IP that we're building out.
And just very a specific random question, but this made me think of it because you have five tool categories. Will all companies be using all five categories or are there exceptions?
Everyone. I mean, you could even like at a meta level, there's three. There's communication, there's planning, and then there's resources. And then, you know, in communication, you've got the subcategory of internal communication, external communication. But and in resources, you've got static knowledge, you've got dynamic knowledge. But there's really three buckets. And no, I think that that is going to stand the test of time. And even in 20 years, even once this AI stuff is even more, you know, well refined, you're going to still have those three buckets.
I was super curious about that. If there was this future where there's just one bucket, but you think it'd always be the three?
Yeah. And I think that certain tools you might be able to achieve some of those buckets because, you know, some of these softwares start getting a bit better and you might be able to get rid of one tool because another tool kind of ticks off two buckets, right? So you might not need five different tools. Maybe you'll need four or three because you can double dip, but you know, it's still going to be the same theory that you've got those, you know, three major buckets that you need to solve for.
Should people work themselves out of their job?
Yep. If you can't be replaced, you can't be promoted. We talk about this one in the book too. And I wouldn't be fearful. I would only be fearful of these things if you're not confident in your ability to, you know, adapt and do higher level work. But that's not really like the mindset of a senior person. You know, you should be excited that ChatGPT, for example, can help you write, you know, articles faster because, you know, now with all this freed up time, maybe you can do more articles. Maybe you can be more strategic with headlines and get a much higher hit rate because now you're able to spend an extra 5 hours a week on purely just headlines that is going to drive many more results. But the more impact that you can make for your team and for your company, the easier it's going to be for them to justify paying you more money and giving you higher level work and putting you on a better path. So you should be excited regardless of all of this stuff, ChatGPT or the stuff we're talking about in my book. It should be exciting to you to get the crap off your plate because now with all this extra freed up time, you can spend it in just better ways.
Well, so how can people get the book? How can people work with you? If so, what are the resources for people to grab here?
So the book is basically 320 pages of just pure content. It's like the employee manual that you never got. It's very dense. It's not one of these books that has, you know, two concepts and then like a million stories. And, you know, I'm an efficiency geek. So if I weren't, this book would have been like 1400 pages long, but HarperCollins didn't even want it to be longer than the 320. So what we did was we created advanced additional content that we put up on comeupforair.com. And so throughout the book, we'll say, you know, if you want to see the quiz or you want to see this playbook or you want to see, you know, a PDF diagram of this, you know, you could go to comeupforair.com. So we've invested a lot of time with the additional bonus content that I'd really encourage people to go and not just buy the book, but also go to that website, enter your email and I believe order number, but get the free resources. So that's one thing. And also if you want additional help, you know, at getleverage.com, we offer more advanced programs to take it, you know, beyond what we cover in the book.
I will put links to all of that in the show notes. I always am just curious because I love the cover art. Were you super involved in the cover art or did they decide that?
Every part of this book took a lot of time. Speaking of time, like, you know, should there be a puddle of water underneath the chair? Should the level of the water come above the sea or below? Everything, like this book, we spent 4 years, we put our blood, sweat, and tears, and like that was everything. The copy, but also, you know, the cover makes a difference. Like having like a cool looking cover, you know, definitely like attracts more people to buying the book. So I did the Audible too. If you're more of a person to do the Audible, like I spent 4 days in a recording studio. I hired a voiceover coach. Every detail of this, because we want this book to still be talked about, you know, in decades to come. So we threw everything at it. So it wasn't just like a one-hit wonder.
I'm so glad because I meant to mention that. I love it when authors read their own book. I both read parts of yours and I listened to parts of it. And I love it when they take the time to do that. I think it makes it so much more personal. Also, I just have to let listeners know because you signed the version that you sent me. Thank you so much. And Nick uses little stickers of his face in the signature, which is like the coolest thing I've ever seen.
MyStickerFace.com.
It's amazing. So, but in any case, this has been absolutely amazing. Speaking of time so much, thank you so much for your time. The last question I ask every single guest on this show, and it's just because I realize more and more each day how important mindset is. So what is something that you're grateful for?
Wow, that's a great question. I'm grateful for so many things, but I have some amazing people in my life, both my team, close friends, mentors, clients, partners. I really am grateful for kind of the network that I've built up in every aspect of the relationships that I have. And I was with Jordan Harbinger years ago and he told me a great line that stuck with me, which was, and Jordan has a podcast too, The Art of Charm. It's a great podcast. That the IRS, you could go bankrupt, the IRS could take away all of your money and your assets, but they can't take away your network. And you know, I am very grateful for having people, you know, like you and John and just amazing people that I can call friends and collaborators.
I love that so much. That really does bring it full circle because our introduction through John just felt very personal and it's been a pleasure to get to know you. And like I said, your book, the timing of it is crazy that I am launching this other company while I was reading it. And I was just thinking, this is the perfect time to be reading this in my life. But clearly you're helping so many people with it. So thank you for everything that you do. And yeah, we'll have to stay in touch. Are you writing another book?
No, I just launched my own podcast. So that's kind of the next project. It's called The Optimized Podcast, theoptimizedpodcast.com. And we're doing live consultations with people. I'm co-hosting it with Jay Abraham, if you've heard of him. He's like a OG world-class marketing and business consultant. He charges like $120,000 a day to consult.
A day?
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of what I'm grateful for, like I'm grateful for people like Jay in my life. Like he's a dear friend and mentor and co-host of this podcast. And we help uncover the biggest hidden opportunities in a business in a 60 to 90 minute consultation. At some point we're going to charge. Right now we're doing it for free while we've launched. And we repurpose the content as a podcast. And that's really fun. So that's the newest project. It'll be a while before I write another book. This, to do it right, it really just takes so much time.
Oh, I know. I feel like people don't don't always realize. Well, welcome to the podcast world. That is amazing. I'll have to check it out and I will put a link to it in the show notes as well.
Yeah, I would love any suggestions because it seems like you've really cracked the podcast code. So let me know your thoughts and any tips.
I will. Thank you. Awesome. Well, enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you so much for listening to the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. For more information, you can check out my book, What When Wine, Lose Weight and Feel Great with Paleo Style Meals, Intermittent Fasting, and Wine, as well as my blog, MelanieAvalon.com. Feel free to contact me at podcast@MelanieAvalon.com. And always remember, you got this.